You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
This is Bowie from the Twin Suns Cup, and you are listening to I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast.
Forgery of imperial documents, possession of stolen property, aggravated assault, resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15, reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
I rebel.
Welcome everyone to I Rebel. I'm your host, Jedi Geek Girl. Joining me this week from the Twin Cities and co-founder of perhaps the best unofficial organized play, Bowie Sessions.
Hey, I'm Bowie Sessions. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, and it has been quite a week, hasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of interesting, exciting news in Destinyland. I always kind of get surprised when suddenly the spoiler season sneaks up on you. Seems like we're always either just getting to learn our cards or just getting to learn about new ones.
It seems like this one in particular really caught up on us.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, we had like two meta shakeups. We had the actual new set, and then we had like a really drastic change in how the meta is considered with the new rules reference guide. So we barely had time to recover from the new set, find our balance before we had to find our balance again. And then, hey, new spoilers all of a sudden to remind us there's a new set coming right around the corner.
So I know that you are excited to dive into Destiny, but before we do, I have to do a little bit of housekeeping. I would like to say thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. It is because of you that we are able to bring this podcast to you and put it out via our hosting website and do our Patreon rewards. If you haven't already, I highly recommend you check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/ivybelldestiny. At this time, I would like to make an announcement. By the time this podcast goes out, it will be out on Facebook. But for those who are not following Facebook, which again, I highly recommend, we are going to be doing our cards in a unique art style. And that art style will be in an 8-bit classic 80s style. I am so excited for these cards to be developed and designed that I cannot highly recommend checking out our Patreon page enough. What do you think about those 8-bit cards?
They're pretty cool. I'm really excited to be a part of it. I really love the idea of doing some sort of like really alternate art styles. Something that still obviously Star Wars, but a lot more harkening back to like the early 90s, late 80s video games that we got. So I'm pretty excited. I also really played a lot of mobile game like Star Wars Death Star thing. And it looks a lot like that. And it's a really neat style. I'm really excited to hopefully sleeve some of those up.
So before we dive into Star Wars Destiny, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm Bowie Sessions. As you mentioned before, I help run the Twin Suns Cup, which I founded with my friend Michael. It's a local fan-run tournament for Minnesota's local Star Wars Destiny crew. We even actually give out like real trophy cups, which I find really fun. I've been playing CCGs competitively and sometimes casually on and off for almost 10 years. Since right after I got out of the Army back in 2008. I actually kind of had quit CCGs right before Star Wars Destiny came out, and I swore I was never going to go back, but they dragged me back in with the Star Wars theme and the really fun mechanics for the game. Since then, I've been really involved in building the Minnesota's community in particular, and even helped playtest several of the things just now seeing the light, which is really exciting.
You mentioned that you playtest. Can you talk about that or not?
Not really. I just am really excited that some of the stuff I was able to put hands on and recommend changes for, seeing some of that stuff come to life is really fun. But I really can't talk about specifics.
All I have to say is that I am really jealous that you get a chance to play these cards ahead of time because there is a lot of exciting stuff coming up.
I will say that some of it is like code named, so you don't always know exactly what card you're playing, which is kind of cool. But I haven't done it in a while, actually. Our playtest group kind of petered off, fell apart to focus on actually playing the game competitively. But this stuff happens months and months ahead of time. So the things I'm just now seeing come out, I tested like pretty early when the game actually came out. And so it's really fun seeing the catch up. And a lot of the stuff in between was stuff I had never had any idea was going to come to life, like all the spirit, no idea. So there's been some surprises, and there will be continue to be surprises since this about ends where I've playtested for.
Can you believe that it has been 1 year since, well, 1 year to the day exactly, since we have gotten our hands on actual Star Wars Destiny non-beta product?
Yeah, it was really cool. I actually wasn't involved at all in like beta stuff, really. I had actually heard nothing about this game, actually, before I kind of on a lark went up to the Fantasy Flight Game Center for the preview event, which is what you're talking about with what happened a year ago now. It's amazing. I went up because my friends were actually the stormtroopers who were in all the photos that were taken. And we just decided to tag along and see what was up. We played about one or two games, and instantly I realized I'm going to be sinking probably the next couple years and several thousand dollars into this game. It was just a crazy amount of fun, and I had no idea who anybody was who was there. But now suddenly a year later, half the people in those photos are like people I'd consider friends, which is really, really fun.
For those who do not know, I know that we have some of our, I know that some of our listeners are newer to the game. Last year, at this time, at the session of this recording, which is November 11th, Fantasy Flight Games held a preview event at the event center. At this preview event center, you were able to get two packs and a starter deck of your choice with a donation of, what, $10 at least?
Yeah, it was a $10 donation.
As well as learn the game from people who worked at Fantasy Flight Games and who volunteered. So you get a chance to get your hands on product as well as play the game slash as well as learn the game. But that is not all. At the preview event, there was also a panel which had Lucas Coy, the writer of the Leia comic, Mark Waid. And you had perhaps the biggest celebrity that FFG has ever associated with. Timothy Zahn himself.
Timothy Zahn is awesome. I've been a fan of his, and I've met him a couple times through the 501st Legion because I costume just like the stormtroopers who were there do. He's an incredibly humble but amazing author for sure.
He is such a wonderful guy. I met him, and at the time, I haven't read any of his work, and this was before Thrawn came out. Since then, I have read both Thrawn and the Thrawn trilogy, so I am very accustomed with his work, but at the time, I was so starstruck, even though I never was familiar with his work. I have to say that when it comes to Star Wars, especially Star Wars literature, he is the biggest name, and I highly recommend if you haven't met him, even if you haven't read any of his books, to please do so, because it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience meeting such a iconic figure in Star Wars.
And I do want to say about Mark Waid, he does a lot more than just the Princess Leia. He's one of my favorite comic book writers. He did an amazing stint on Fantastic Four. He basically redefined the Flash and made Wally West really come into his own. He wrote a bunch of other Flash-related characters. He wrote a huge chunk of 52, defining like an entire era of DC. Wrote a bunch of Justice League, a really incredible run on the Hulk. And my personal favorite is he wrote a very dark series of comics called Insufferable and Irredeemable, which are more like independent comics. He is a prolific and awesome and super down-to-earth writer, and I was incredibly pleased to get to meet him and talk with him about comics, which doesn't have much to do with Star Wars for the most part, but that was who I was definitely the most excited to meet at the time.
I remember at the event, like, everybody was there for Timothy Zahn, and poor Mark didn't have a lot of people there for him, which I really felt for the guy because of what I have heard. I'm only familiar with his work through the Leia comic, but he does a lot of good work. And seeing someone like that, it's very, you know, you feel for them because you know that they have contributed a lot.
Oh, yeah. It's just definitely a context thing for him. Like, if he's at a convention, Mark Waid always has a huge line. But this is just a weird cross-section for him to show up for because there's a bunch of Star Wars geeks and there's a bunch of gamer geeks. And he hasn't written a lot for games, and he only just started writing for Leia. So he wasn't necessarily the best suited, potentially, for the situation. But I was definitely happy to take advantage of the fact that he had no line because I had tons of time to talk to him without anyone being annoyed that I was holding up a spot.
So that's not all that happened at the preview event last year. Last year, they also had a staff challenge where you could win an acrylic card, which has not been made since then. We had an acrylic oversized card, thick, a little wider, but maybe a little bit bigger than a regular card. And the only way you could get them was to be a staff member. Did you take a part of these staff challenges? And were you able to get one or two?
I did actually do the staff challenge. I fought two staff members in the game, but I had literally never even heard of the deck of the game before I sat down. So I definitely, I'm a clever guy and I can pick up games quick, but they had the advantage for sure. I had no chance of winning. I got kind of close in one game, but I didn't pull it off. So I did not walk away with an acrylic. I think only like eight people did, something like that. It was pretty small.
It was really small. It was like eight each. So in the world, it's like 16 of them. I know towards the end, they had a couple of Kylos left. So I don't know if those were given out or not, but they are rare. They are valuable. And at the time, we did not know that, hey, this is it. There is no more of them.
Yeah, I hear they're really hard to make. So they decided to kind of stop doing that is what I understand.
I could imagine, but they are really nice.
They're kind of cool. I like the... some of the other promos they've done since then. I didn't like the fact they had to like cut it out from the card. I don't know. It looked kind of weird on the edges. I still would have loved to have one though, if for no other reason than the fact they flip on eBay now for like $1,000.
You know, sometime I should probably show up and bring mine. I have the Ray one, but I don't know what I would play with Ray right now that I would like to play. I mean, right now I'm playing Kanan Krygon, which is probably contender for the best deck in format, but I'm not one to experiment, so I probably won't be breaking out Ray for a while.
Oh, there's a couple spots for her, but yeah, we can always talk about that in an event sometime.
So I know that our listeners want to hear about the future, because the past is the past, but the future is where Destiny is heading. And boy, is it, to steal a catchphrase from another franchise, it's about to shift into Turbo.
I just don't know if that necessarily applies. I think the format's going to really slow down. Based on these new spoilers, it looks like we're going really heavy for shields. And a shield-dominated meta like that is not necessarily going to get a lot faster, with the exception of maybe some more power for Qui-Gon types.
When I talk about the game shifting into Turbo, I'm actually talking about the game as a whole, not just the spoilers that we've gotten. We got rotation, we got a somewhat new organized play setup, we got new formats, and this is an evolution of the game into the next phase of it.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I definitely think some of this has just been kind of a long time coming. I think the only really surprise we got out of any of it was maybe trilogy format, but we definitely knew that cycles were coming. Anybody who didn't know that just didn't have a lot of experience with games like this, but a cycle was pretty inevitable. I think them giving us a year's heads up is pretty reasonable. It's going to be about a year before any of this cycle information actually matters.
I think a lot of people knew that it was coming, but no one, at least I speak for myself, no one knew that it was going to be announced this month. You know, I was expecting something at Worlds, maybe, just because, you know, it's Worlds, and I know that they have announced, I think they have announced things at Worlds before, but I'm not sure on that.
I'll admit, I was probably expecting the news for this stuff to come out after Legacies came out. I don't know if I was necessarily expecting it to be a specific time like Worlds or Celebration or any other specific like date, but I definitely figured we'd have Legacies in hand, so probably sometime in January is probably when I figured it would come out, but I knew it had to come soon, so it's still exciting to see now, so it gives us a lot of time to get used to the idea.
But not only that, but it was dropped at 5:30 p.m. on a Wednesday.
Yeah, it definitely took me by surprise. I mean, a lot of people, you know, were still, had just finished their day. Usually they let this stuff happen to ruin our productivity at work sometime around lunch.
Yeah, that usually happens. Whenever spoilers drop, I'm usually at work and I usually take a good 15 minutes to an hour, depending on the spoilers, you know, catching up on the spoilers, talking about them and doing what I do with the spoilers. It really doesn't do well for my job at all, but it's fun when they happen.
It's always a nice breakup to a tedious day, for sure.
So speaking of spoilers, how about we dive into them?
All right, yeah, sure.
So of the spoilers, which one is your favorite?
So, I mean, I don't currently play the Qui-Gon Shield deck, but I'm pretty excited for it. But because of the deck that I personally play the most right now, which is a Rainbow Raikkon mill deck, the card that definitely is most important to me is probably the card that is least important to literally anyone else looking at these, which is Force Meditation. That is definitely a solid upgrade that is going to find a guaranteed space in any blue hero mill deck. It's 2-cost upgrade with just one blank, which is understandable for 2. And it has no sides that are bad to the plan for a shield-based mill deck. It's got a focus, which I can turn into a whatever I want it to be, obviously. It's got a shield side. It's got a resource. which obviously funds plenty of my ridiculous events that fill out my deck. And then two specials that allow me to top deck two cards off of my opponent. So that's definitely going to find room somewhere in the deck. I don't know where, but it's definitely going to make some space in there for it. Again, that's going to be probably one of the worst cards, maybe the second worst card from the spoiler for literally anyone but me, but I'm pretty excited about it.
I wouldn't say that for me. I'm not a mill player. In fact, I really hate mill. If you want to see me go on tilt, play hero mill against me because you're plowing through shields and it's just ridiculous. But I look at this card and I just shake my head. I know how it can put me on tilt. I was like, oh no, not another good mill card. But it's not my play style, but not a card I want to see across from me. My favorite card is another card that could perhaps go in Hero Mill, and that is Yoda, Wizard Master, which is a legendary card with 10 health, 10, 13, 2 focus, 1 disrupt, 1 discard, 1 shield, special, no blanks, special, choose and do 2 of the following, gain 1 resource, give a character 1 shield, turn one of your die to any side or discard the top card of this deck. Holy Chaining Yoda. You think Maz was bad? I think this has the potential to speed up your turn to a level that Maz could not do before. And maybe I am being a bit hyperbolistic about it, but Yoda's special is one that is going to be really annoying.
That being said, his points are great. They're amazing. Don't get me wrong. 10 points for 10 hit points, no blanks, no blue side modified, nothing. I mean, he's actually a really great support character, no doubt. But because of his points, I don't think you're going to find him in a lot of hero mill. He's going to find himself, in my opinion, in a lot of like shield focused decks because he fits really well with like Qui-Gon, or he'll fit with one die only in a lot of top heavy heavyweight decks like Luke Skywalker, and he'll help anybody get to their mission for sure. I just think his points probably edge him out from being from finding himself in a proper mill deck. But I do think he's amazing. He definitely deserves that legendary. He's one of the best values for 10 you can find.
What I really like about him is basically with one die of his showing special, you can potentially doing 3 unblockable. Now, granted, you have to have a character activated with Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber, but if you roll the Yoda and roll a special, you resolve the special, changing the other Yoda to a special and putting a shield on your other character. You do the same thing, but to the character that has the Obi-Wan lightsaber and another shield, and then you do the Obi-Wan Kenobi's special, doing 3 unblockable after you put a shield on the character using the ability. It's just, I just look at it and I'm like, it's going to be really interesting because all you need to do is roll 1 special and then you're chaining with Yoda.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's definitely going to be an interesting pair for Qui-Gon, which obviously will probably end up like lowering the maximum damage ceiling, just like any other support character tends to do. But it, just like any other support character, he's also going to really raise the floor of the damage potential for those decks. So we're going to see him in a lot of decks, at least tried out. I'm excited to see how he performs. He definitely has a lot of potential.
Another card that I really like is Defensive Teaching, which is a 0-cost blue support that states each one of your blue characters can have 1 additional shield. You thought the hero mill with shield was annoying before. I mean, they can have another shield on your blue characters.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find it again in much of mill decks because mill decks benefit off of having a variety of colors, and it's only going to benefit the one blue character. But again, it's going to be a deck tech, huge upgrade, quality of life improvement for like a Qui-Gon deck, like I said before. This is what most spoilers are on the hero side, honestly. And it's awesome because, I mean, imagine having 5 shields on Qui-Gon and whoever his other character is. That's devastating. You riposte for 5, unlimited health effectively, unless you can sneak past it. Obviously, the intimidates are going to feel really bad. But otherwise, this card at 0 is really powerful. My only real complaint with it is the art. The art's well done, but he's not teaching defense in that art. He's asking his younglings, where did they hide the planet? You know, I just find that to be kind of conflicting.
Kamino. Yep. I remember that very iconic thing.
Yeah. Where did she hide Kamino? Exactly. That's not defensive.
Not only that, but that card works really well with the next card that was spoiled, a Taru Strike, which is a 1 blue hero event card that states, resolve one of your blue character dies showing melee damage, increasing its value by the number of shields on that character.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like a cheaper and more reliable No Mercy, which definitely is going to become a must-have in any sort of shield-aggressive blue deck. I mean, with that defensive teaching, just like you were saying, it really works well together, because you're believably able to do maybe like 7 damage for 1 resource cost. That's insane.
Yes, it requires a lot of setup, but right now you can do a maximum of 9 damage. It's really situational, but you would have to have a Mace Windu with a 4 die on it. You would have to have Mace Windu with 5, 6, 7 shields. No, the max you can actually do is 2 defensive teachings, 2 Mandalorian armors. That's 4 plus the 3 shields that you already have on him. So that would be 7. Then the 4 would be 11, which is pretty crazy. I mean, yeah, it requires a lot of setup, but could you imagine someone actually pulling that off?
Yeah, and in Magical Perfect Land, 11 damage for 2 cost, pretty powerful. That is pretty nuts. I would not want to see that happen to me. I'm sure somebody's going to build that just for funsies. I mean, I definitely thought about it. It's never going to be competitive, but when it happens, it'll definitely probably even get a high five from the opponent, because that is an amazing thing to pull off. It would be cool.
Well, I think that is going to be one of those things that the Team Covenant talked about, this, where you have that player who they don't really care about winning or losing. They want to pull off a wonderful, really unlikely combo. I think that type of player is going to be attracted to this combo, potentially.
Oh yeah, I mean, I was part of a group of people trying to really, really get Luke Skywalker infinite damage launch bays off last set. So there's definitely a player base out there who really likes not playing competitive once in a while just to play something really dumb. That kind of combination definitely appeals to the really dumb player in me.
What do you think of the next hero's blue spoiler, Adapt, which is a card that costs 0 that states, remove 1 shield from one of your characters to gain 1 resource.
I think the only reason this card doesn't look as good as it does is because almost every other card in this reveal was amazing. Adapt, I think, is going to end up being a real underdog, include in a ton of decks. I mean, effectively, this is hero in Rage, considering how frequent we have shields. And in Rage, it sees play for a good reason. So I think Adapt is actually going to end up in a lot more decks than you expect. I think it's currently flying under the radar for people's excitement, just because every other card we saw was insane. But it's really good. I am not excited that there's yet another card. I'll have to think around whether or not they can sneak a resource in, but it's going to be pretty solid in a lot of decks.
What I like about this card is, if there is one area that blue struggles with, blue heal specifically, it's resources. Yes, there are cards to help cut the curve of your deck, but not a lot of cards that give you resources reliably and efficiently. And with Blue Hero, you are going to be hitting a lot of shields and have a lot of shields anyway. So for 0 and a card, why not remove one of them and get a resource to hopefully turn the turn around for you?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is I hate when I'm playing against a deck that I think might have Enrage or something like that, because you never know when they're going to be able to sneak out that damage and whether it's safe to claim or you still need to be ready here with control. If that die is something you can safely ignore, if they're going to be able to sneak out like a Force Illusion. And this gives people options, which is why I think it's going to definitely fit in a lot of decks. I don't think it's going to be like a sexy, amazing card that people can't stop fanning themselves about, but I think it's going to be a really solid workhorse of a card for sure.
Would you run this in Hero Mill, or do you think the deck doesn't have enough space for it?
Yeah, it definitely doesn't have enough space for it, especially with the fact I run Chance Cube in mind anyway. I get plenty of money usually. The one money would never be the game breaker for me. I don't have any cost sides really, you know. So for Mill, I don't think it's really an include, but I think for any really aggressive deck, you're always hunting for that one extra dollar.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking that it would probably be better in a aggressive type deck. So moving on to the villain side, which one of these are you most excited about?
I think the card I am most excited for the villain side is probably Maul. I don't think any of the villain side is quite as exciting as the hero side, including the character you skipped, Ayla. But I think Maul is probably the best on the villain side. He's 12 costs for 11, which is okay. But with his sides, he's a solid enough character for those points, because you're going to have regularly doing at least 2 damage off of most rollouts. and then his ability really pushes him past it. After one or more of his character or upgrade dice are removed, not just his character, but his upgrade dice, which is great, you may then remove one of their dice in response. That's awesome. It makes them terrified to remove one of his dice. You can gladly load him up without much fear. I think he's better elite, obviously, because then there's even more threat that they can remove. But even with one die, you load him up, make them have to really choose who they want to target. It's sort of like TIE Pilot, where you're very worried about control for the whole game. And that's a really good psychological effect on the opponent. And I'm nervous to play against it, because I'm not sure how I would. It's pretty fun. His main problem, though, is at elite, he doesn't have a lot of good pairs. So that kind of dulls some of the excitement. If he was 12-15 instead of 12-16, he'd really be singing, because he'd have almost every possible perfect pair. But at 12-16, I don't know what I'd pair with him. Probably Phasma with the new points at 14 points probably be good. Aside from that, I don't know.
What about Anakin?
Oh, yeah, the new Anakin could do okay. Isn't he, is he 13 points for elite?
He is. He would be able to be paired with Maul as well as get a one-cost plot.
Yeah, that'd actually be really good. I forgot about him. I was thinking maybe Seventh Sinister or Kylo Ren, the original Kylo Ren. But yeah, I think Anakin's probably a really good pair. Him or Phasma.
I think Maul has a really fantastic ability. I'm not as high up on him as some people seem to be. His die size pretty good for his cost, but his cost is very awkward. Yeah, I don't know. He's fairly decent, but I'm not really high up. I'm more excited for Palpatine, but I'll get to that in a second. You did mention that we did overlook a card, and I would like to quickly go back and look at that. It's a shame, because she's one of my favorite Jedi characters that don't get a lot of screen time, at least when it comes to the films themselves. Can you please go into that character?
Sure. Aayla Secura is actually one of my favorite characters, too. I was stoked to see her. I'm sad that we don't have either Kit Fisto, who was her mentor in canon, or Quinlan Vos, who in the comics was her significant other. Well, I mean, we do have Quinlan Vos, but you can't play him because he's a villain with her. But as a card, she's really solid. She now fills that same role that Rey and Kanan are currently filling. We've got that 9/12/13 kind of spot for a hero that makes them easy to elite alongside anybody. Or even with regular, they're solid because she's 9 points for 10 hit points. And then she has literally 3 damage sides that are all black, no modifieds. And 2 of those damage sides are higher than 1 damage. I mean, that is way better than Kanan's damage output, way better than Rey's damage output, even if some of it's the new indirect damage type. And then conversely, her other sides are a resource, which is never terrible. I'd much prefer to see that than a disrupt or something. And then a special. And that special is one of the best character die specials that aren't damage focused, because it's guaranteed control in a way that I think they kind of missed out on with the Inquisitor. Because this one, just any die of an opponent's, you can turn to a side, and in the process, turn one of yours to a side. So it focuses you and defocuses them. That's awesome. I think she is one of the best values for points that you have for a damage character. The question is her special and her great dice enough to overcome how amazing Rey's ability still is? I don't know, but she's definitely a contender, and you're going to see her in a lot of decks.
I agree, but I just cannot help but feel like at her point cost, there are other characters that are at the very least more attractive to your player base. I know that, like I said, I'm attracted to Yoda just because Yoda's awesome to me and a chaining thing. You can argue like Secura might be a better play because of her higher damage output and her control side. It all depends on the player, but I just think at her point cost, she is going to be overlooked by a lot of people, at least at her elite cost, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. I think you're going to see her pretty much play any place where you would have put an elite Rey before. And I'm excited to see how that does.
I can agree with that, yeah. Going back to the villains, the character that I mentioned earlier that I like between Maul and Palpatine is actually the Palpatine card. I think that is a card that I think is being overlooked. I think that is due to the fact of his point cost. I think his power action can be very devastating. I think that it can turn the game. Being able to play an event from your hand, decreasing its cost by the number of different damage symbols showing on your die, is amazing to me. I mean, yeah, you have to have at least 2 different damage sides showing. But the ability to play a 2-cost or 3-cost for 0 or 1 is I mean, go and look and see how many strong 3-cost blue villain cards there are. There's quite a few. And they don't see play because they cost 3. Now, if they cost 1, they would see play, and Palpatine allows you to do that. Yes, he is a little bit slow because he has 3 different damages, a 2 range, a 2 melee, and a 2 indirect. But with all in, at least for 2 turns, you should be able to get your damage out relatively quickly. And then again, his other die size are resource blank, so, and he has 12 health, and he's 20 cost. I mean, I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I think he has a lot of potential.
No, it's definitely not you. I mean, at Worlds last year, patient and slow decks, rainbows and rainbow 4 wides and phasmas. I played a rainbow 4 wide, dominated, even though they didn't win. Every Nationals and Gen Con last season all triumphed with Rainbow 9s, which is a deck that doesn't care to clean usually. I think that patient decks definitely have space to win and do well, obviously. It just definitely is less appealing to people. This one is strong. I like this deck a lot. I mean, the deck that this guy would build a lot. I saw him and immediately started kind of dream crafting what a deck would look like for him. Begging me to mix damage makes me really schizophrenic on what kind of upgrades I'd include, which is really fascinating on its own. I think it's going to take a while to find the right deck build for him because of his ability, but I think it's going to be really great when you do. Because, yeah, even Rise Again, if you get 3 damage sides showing, Rise Again costs 2. I mean, that's insane. And even with only 1 damage side showing somehow, you're still playing a 1-cost blue event for free once per round. This is a clearly superior Jyn Erso ability, really. Because you also don't have to just choose to do it. There's 2 things to it. 1, you don't have to just choose to do it as your first event. You can choose to do it as any of your events. And 2, you can use it as an action, which is really versatile and is going to get around some of the action denial stuff that we've started to see in the game. I think he'll end up paired probably with like a 1-die red, most likely for maximum power and stuff like leadership. Like Phasma, actually, at 10 points, I really think that's a probable partner for him. But even if you wanted to run him 1-die, his power action is good enough for it. He's really cool, interesting character, and at 12 hit points, he's going to be hard to kill. I don't know if that's going to be enough to take him away from the desire for either a few characters who play fast aggro or many characters who play slow, but I think it'll make it make at least an interesting argument for it.
I'm sitting here thinking about partners as we speak. I don't have all the characters in front of me, but you almost want to... In my opinion, it seems like the way you want to build a deck with him is to almost pair him with a partner that would kind of distract you from him, perhaps, kind of like the old Vader Raider build.
Yeah, I think that's true. There's not a lot of great partners to fully do that with unless you want to put him at 1-die, at which point you can do an Elite Phasma, or like we were discussing, you could do an Anakin, or you could do couple other options at 14, like we discussed. You've got Seventh Sister, things like that. But most of those will end up with him being the target, with the exception of maybe Phasma at Elite. So maybe if you did 1-die there. Otherwise, I don't think you're going to get away from the fact that he will be the target if you make him the 2-die of any of these pairs. But if you do the 2-die, you've got a lot of choices. You can go Guardian to try to slow it down, because almost every Guardian slides in at 10. Or you could roll in just pure aggro, like the 10 1-die Phasma, which gets you leadership and access to a lot of cool red cards. I don't know, there's a lot of ways you can go with this card, which is why I was saying I think we're going to see this guy get toyed with a lot before we settle on really the optimal build. But there will be an optimal build that I think is going to be powerful.
With how efficient he is with resources, do you think right now, in a vacuum, the best way to build him is with Holocron instead of with weapons?
No, I doubt it. I don't know. I just don't. I do actually. I'm a weird proponent of Holocrons and Force Speeds solely because they're zero cost with focuses. I don't actually these days really believe that the Holocron suite is worth it, because if you build around the Holocron suite, you end up gambling for whether or not you're going to win. And I hate playing a deck where I'm counting on 1 or 2 cards or else my strategy feels like it falls apart. Because I did that in the first set for a long time with Holocron Suite. It was always questionable. And when it worked beautifully. But when it didn't show up, or if now somebody would rend me, I would hate to feel like the bottom just fell out. So I never want to build around that personally.
That makes sense. But if you're playing with Rise Again, it's better to, well, you could always include perhaps our next card, Maul's Lightsaber, which is a 3-cost upgrade weapon, blue villain, that has a 2 melee side, a 2 modified melee side, a 3, and 4 modified melee side, as well as a resource and, of course, your classic blank. It is blue character only, and it has a power action that states, if an opponent has no shields on all of their characters, roll this die into your pool. Wow, I really love this card. I think it's going to be difficult with the amount of blue heroes running shields, getting the ability off, especially with blue going to the next level. But boy, what an ability it can be.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest downside to the power action is just the fact that you're going to have to end up resolving this die twice in a turn, which is going to be awkward because you're going to have to leave two plus sides out there just in case. So the worst case scenario, they have shields. It just means I'm faster. I wouldn't be the end of the world if I'm not going to be able to roll this thing back out. Because even without that ability, for three costs, this is one of the best like values for a card I've seen. It's solid. You have seriously two-thirds chance of rolling at least two damage as long as you have a modified to meet it. It's really impressive. I would not put this necessarily in with a Palpatine focus deck because he only has one side that's black side, but give me a character with a bunch of guaranteed melee sides, including Maul, suitably, and it would be amazing. The only thing I'm actually kind of surprised by is that we don't see any sort of, if this upgrade is placed on Maul, do this kind of thing, which has been the flavor choice recently, ever since the two-player set with Crossguard, Phasma's Blaster, Poe's Blaster. It seems like we've wanted to have these weapons do something special with their owner, so I'm kind of surprised we didn't see that. But honestly, at three cost, this has amazing value, even in situations where you're not ever able to use the power action.
In my opinion, it will definitely be a staple in blue villain melee decks. That is just my opinion. I mean, some people might not, but it's definitely really good. It's such a good value. But wrapping up our spoilers here, I want to quickly do Double Strike, which is a two blue villain event card that states resolve one of your dice dealing melee damage without removing it from the pool. And Snare, which I love, three blue villain event card that you can only play when you have one or more exhaust characters, exhaust a character. What do you think about these two cards?
I think they're both really good, but I don't think they're going to see a lot of play. Double Strike is a two-cost event, which unless you're playing a Palpatine deck, you're not going to have always the feel that you can afford it. It's just clearly inferior to a No Mercy on almost every other circumstance. I think with the competition for deck space we have, it's not going to see most deck play it. But Snare, this one I think people will try to sneak in for a little while, but it's devastating when you can use it, but it requires you being faster than your opponent. It requires you having three resources. I don't know. It's hit or miss, and it's expensive. So I think in most decks, you're not going to see it. But it's definitely a deck I would throw into that Palpatine deck.
I was just about to say that. I don't think Double Strike will see a lot of play. I think you hit the nail on the head with No Mercy being better. Snare, I think, is fantastic in the Palpatine deck, especially if you run Palpatine Double Die, being able to exhaust one of your characters for one resource. Yes, please. But outside of that, it's probably not going to see a lot of play. Perhaps someone running Hidden Agenda Blue, but I don't know. That just doesn't seem good in my opinion.
Yeah, I'll love to see when it can see play, because it will be devastating and surprising to the opponent, because it's not going to see a lot of it. That's one of my favorite things about playing my weird off-the-wall Riken deck, as it feels, is that the deck is made up of cards people say, what does that card do? Which is always a kind of a fun play experience. So I think we're going to see that with Snare in the few decks that lean on it. But I think we'll find some places, but I don't think it's going to be in more than maybe one or two builds.
That is not all that we got this week. This week we actually got announcement of the rotation, like we mentioned previously in the show, as well as new formats. I would like to touch upon your thoughts about these new formats as well as rotation. I know that there has been a lot of talk about the trilogy format, and a lot of it has not been really positive. What do you think about the trilogy format in general? Because Standard and Infinite are pretty play on word standard of a CCG.
Sure, yeah, because yeah, you're right. Infinite is always just like a what would normally kind of be considered a legacy format, which is just everything. It can get crazy and weird, but people love it because they get to use cards they don't always get to use. So that's definitely going to see play and be normal. And Standard is obviously the default. So again, there's no frills there. I'm just excited that both those formats exist. Trilogy is definitely the only real surprise that came out of this format discussion. And I think Trilogy has its place. I don't know that it's going to be common outside of apparently the new tournament, which we'll talk about soon, I imagine. As a general rule, I think that it's really good for probably breaking in new sets, but I doubt we'll really see it as a common format outside of maybe combining it with draft to do block draft, or when we're just coming out with a new set of cards and some stores will use that as like a invitational for new players to come by the new product and try just the new product and get familiar with the cards. I think it has a niche use outside of the Galactic qualifiers. I don't think it's bad like everyone else thinks it is. I just think it's definitely an inferior format. That doesn't make it useless. It just makes it less preferred.
What I really like about the trilogy format is it is a great way to get new players into the game. At six sets or four at the very least, it can be very overwhelming for a newer player. And it's a lot of catch up for the newer player to go through in order to catch up. With the trilogy format, if you're a newer player, you can join and play this format and you don't have to worry about a larger library. Like I have mentioned a lot on the forum, you basically come to Destiny for trilogy, you basically get your set and all the cards from that block, and this should be fairly cost and reasonable, and then you stay for standard because, you know, you have your new cards and new cards are coming out. Fantastic, you're good. And then you grow an infinite. You're in the game for 3 or 4 years and you have this large library. So I think trilogy is a brilliant idea to get new players in the game because not everybody will have the resources, especially with, at the very largest, 1,000 card pool. I think a lot of people are looking at it and being like, I don't want to play trilogy. It's like FFG already stated that the official format for competitive play outside of Galactic qualifier and only one event is going to be standard. So your competitive player don't have to worry about trilogy. Trilogy is just an option for your store that's trying to grow their community or a group of friends maybe. Maybe a group of friends who play casually who can't afford to play standard. I think trilogy is actually brilliant. You gotta remember that trilogy is not for you and me. You and I are both competitive players. Having said that, I love playing in different formats, so I'm still gonna have a trilogy deck, and I hope I can play trilogy even if it's just a casual game. But I'm just more optimistic, I guess, about the trilogy format.
Yeah, for me, the problem is just that, like you said, it's great for introducing new blood, and I absolutely agree with that. I think it's a really new introductory friendly kind of format. But the problem with that, though, is that to introduce new blood, you do have to have old blood who wants to introduce them. And you're going to have a lot of problems with, if you have an active enough community, you're going to have competitive stores and you're going to not see much much in the way of people showing up for trilogy formats. And you're going to have pretty low turnouts, which won't look appealing to those new players. So I think there is an appeal to trilogy. I just think we have to be careful in how we find the right balance for putting them into play that doesn't alienate existing players. I think we'll find its footing, but it's definitely going to be the less preferred of the formats.
I have a proposal that I would like to make to you as a organized play person, because you organize events. What do you think about, like, you have your competitive event, like your store championship, your regional, but as a side event going on at the same time, you have a trilogy event. So let's say I am casual, or I have my son and daughter with me, or I have my husband with me, or whoever, you know, they're casual to the game and they know a little bit about the game and they want to learn about it, but they don't want to play in a high stress environment. So you have your high-end competitive standard event, but at the same time, you have your, like, your 8-person trilogy format for people who want to meet your larger community but don't want to play in the higher end competitive atmosphere. What do you think about as it being something to run alongside of your standard type event?
I think it's unrealistic mostly. I think it's a good idea if we lived in a perfect world, but we here in Minnesota are like incredibly blessed with the amount of population we have, and we still had store championships that only had like 20 players. I don't think you're going to magically materialize 8 more players who don't want to play the store championship, you know? Like, I don't know. Yeah, it is an interesting idea. I just don't know if there's always going to be the population for it, because other stores, there were store championships with 12 players, you know, less. There was a store championship I remember that had 8 players, which is where a Hans Snap deck won. So I just don't know. I'm hesitant to believe that. But I do think that we can find room for trilogy. I definitely at my store, because I run a weekly tournament, plan to do a trilogy draft when the next set Legacies comes out. And I'm I'm really excited and hopeful that we'll have a good community turnout for it. Because that's how I used to get all my cards of Magic, was I would play drafts and then I would just buy singles instead of me buying like 30 boxes, which is how it feels like I'm doing for the game now. So I'm excited for draft, and I'm excited that there is a encouragement to use just one set to play without having to worry about other sets. So I think there's a spot for it, but it's definitely going to be something you have to carefully balance.
At the very least, it is an option. And having more option isn't necessarily a bad thing.
Oh yeah, options are always great. Anything that can get people excited for the game, I'm behind.
Before we wrap up, we have one more thing to cover, and that would be the Galactic Qualifier. What do you think about this as a new layer of competitive play?
Mostly I'm stoked. Any excuse for more serious multi-state tournaments is very welcome by me. It's really exciting to me that we get another one of these. Something specifically focused around Star Wars Destiny sounds awesome. It also has amazing looking prize support that dwarfs what we saw at Worlds last year, which also gives me hope, by the way, for Worlds this year. I know that I'll definitely be making the trip out to Schaumburg, Illinois, so I can lose gracefully.
You and I both, I'm going there as well. So I'm going to be on my phone around 7, 8 o'clock, whenever it drops, trying to get tickets, because that prize support looks really good, and I'm planning on playing every day. It's going to be quite exciting.
Oh, it'd be fun, yeah. I'm also kind of tempted to head back to my alma mater, because I'm from San Francisco, and so my favorite convention in San Francisco is KublaCon. And I haven't been back in years since I moved out here to Minnesota, and they have Destiny Galactic Qualifiers planned for May, so that's actually really tempting. And obviously, they say Trilogy is going to be a thing there. I think I'm excited to see that. I definitely was one of the top players at the multiplayer format we had at Worlds, which really was impossible to test for, which is going to be how Trilogy is. It'll be really hard to know what the Trilogy meta is going to be like, so you're going to kind of jump in there blind, and that's kind of exciting in its own way. But yeah, I'm excited that they're going to make this whole thing dedicated to Destiny. I'm excited that it'll be something new and fun, and I think Fantasy Flight's really smart to do it, because they saw the turnout at their last Worlds, and it was insane how much Destiny dominated the experience compared to every other game. I don't know if they really expected how big of a thing it was and how many people they had to turn away. So I think they're trying to roll out some more avenues for us to do this, and I'm totally in.
I have two more questions. Number one, how surprised were you that there are no Minnesota Galactic Qualifiers at this time? And number two, do you think Star Wars Destiny is big enough. Do you think FFG will take a chance on Star Wars Destiny and have its own world event? Or do you think it will always be tied to the Star Wars games? Because I could see a Galactic Qualifier at World and them not wanting to announce it because they don't want to announce the date that they have planned for Worlds.
I am actually really surprised, first of all, that we didn't have something from Minnesota. That was shocking. The closest one is Illinois, but I'll make the trip. It's fine. Everybody makes the trip out here. It's only fair. I drive out to Indiana to do Gen Con, so it's not that big a deal. I'm happy for it. It was a surprise, but it's almost kind of nice of them to, if they really don't have a Minnesota one planned, for them to let other states have some dominance here, which just feels kind of magnanimous. That also makes me doubt them, and I feel like a Minnesota event is going to land. I just don't know when or where, because I feel like they would have said it for FFG. But maybe you're right. Maybe they're going to replace Worlds with it. I don't know. I definitely don't think that Destiny is going to get its own Worlds this year. If we are, I'll be surprised. This upcoming year. But I think subsequent to that, this game will hopefully have grown large enough that they won't be able to deny the fact that their Worlds is pretty small in terms of how many people are actually here from the people who want to play it. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel like an accurate representation of what Worlds Destiny should be. It should be, maybe even a couple thousand people. And I would love for that to be the case. So I'm hopeful that they can dedicate the entire event to Destiny someday. If not this upcoming year, which I doubt, then hopefully the next year. Because FFG is very bad at taking chances, usually. So I think they're going to wait until the writing is unbelievably clear before they say, okay, let's do it.
I actually would be really surprised if there are not Galactic Qualifiers event at Worlds for the following year Worlds. It's just that they probably do not want to announce the dates that they have planned for Worlds, even though we probably already know it's the first weekend in May. They just don't want to get anything official out there stating that at this time.
Maybe. Oh, and I also want to say real quick about the prize support. The prize support mats are amazing. The event cards look really cool. I mostly have questions about the character art. I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks they look really lazy. Like, I almost wish that they just didn't have that weird, like, background logo, because it makes them kind of look like weird. I don't know. Doesn't make them really pop. I think if you wanted the character to stand in an isolated field and just be striking on their own, just make it a white background for all that matters. But with the weird logo behind them, it is, I don't know. I don't know that I'd be happy to sleeve up any of those over their actual card.
I actually like the logos, but that's just me. The only problem, if I have any, is the translucent background. I would rather have a solid, like, black or white. But I actually do like the logos. But again, that's just me. So.
And again, I wish that we had, battlefields. Like, once more, we're getting cards that feel kind of irrelevant. Those are battlefields that you not often see. I think they could have made better choices. But that being said, the fact that we have a ton of prize support to choose from, super exciting. And I am hungry to try to win those two mats for sure.
I am excited to get my hands on them too. And as a collector, I just saw it and I was happy and both sad because I will not be able to attend as many Galactic qualifiers as I would like. So it is now time to wrap things up. Thank you so much, Boy, for coming on and talking some Destiny with me.
Sure. It was fun.
Before we let you go, if people would like to contact you, where can they find you?
Sure. If you wanted to reach out somehow, you can probably reach out to me through the page we have for the Twin Suns Cup. If you just go to facebook.com/Twin Suns Cup, TwinSunsCup, Twin Suns Cup. That's where our little tournament page is. If you message us or comment, you know, we'll see it, either myself or Michael. Aside from that, you know, that's probably about it for reaching out to me. Happy that you wanted to have me on, and hopefully I was able to provide an entertaining interview.
It was so much fun and a pleasure. That concludes this episode of I Rebel. Thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you all next time.
This has been I Rebel, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I have been your host, Jedi Geek Girl. If you would like to contact me, please send me an email at irebeldestiny@gmail.com. And as always, may the Force be with you. I Rebel is an independent podcast, not associated with Lucasfilm, Disney, Fantasy Flight Games, or any other organization. All copyrights for Star Wars Destiny, and all other properties belong to the proper copyright holders.